Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail. Companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Tina Zorinsky, CEO of SkillsGap.
In cyber, currently, there's 700,000 unfilled jobs. And in manufacturing, by 2025, there will be 3.4 million manufacturing jobs in the world, and 2 million of those are going unfilled. But in Gen Z, there are 2 billion globally. So if you start to run the numbers, it's not a people problem. They're there. It is an awareness and access problem.
This is Tina. She's a true tech entrepreneur on a mission. Her work as CEO and founder of Zwo, a national branding firm, has provided her with decades of experience providing strategic counsel, marketing direction, and brand development to organizations that aspire to grow their business, reach emerging markets, and launch innovative projects and initiatives. Her passion? Developing the youth for middle-skill and STEM jobs, helping states meet their industry recruitment and economic development workforce needs, and helping manufacturers and other industries fill their talent gaps with skilled recruits. She has focused her volunteer services efforts on young people, helping them to get the best start in life and grow into mature, valued young adults. And this work sparked the big idea behind SkillsGap. SkillsGap is on a mission to connect youth to life-changing careers through game-changing play. The platform is designed to attract and grow a sustainable workforce pipeline with the geo-specificity to meet the regions and industry-specific needs. This while providing the next workforce generation access to meaningful careers and pathways, even in underserved areas. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Tina to my podcast. We explore what's broken in the way we fill our workforce pipeline. And Tina shares how, through technology, we can solve this problem at a global scale, in a way that's both fun and ultra precise. She shares her big lessons learned in creating a flywheel for growth by removing industry barriers. And last but not least, she shares her advice on creating a software business that people keep talking about. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, how to find transformative innovation opportunities by zooming out to the global picture. Secondly, how to create a flywheel for growth when there's no real owner of the problem. Thirdly, how you can solve a global challenge by approaching it locally. And lastly, the power that unlocks when purpose and technology blend. Well, hi, Tina. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest this time on the podcast.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me, Ton.
Pleasure. And when I saw the topic that you represent, the mission that you're on, because I'm always looking for tech entrepreneurs on a mission, I was like, oh my God, this is something that I've been on stage on in my time at Unit 4. Because I was, it's such an important thing that we start fixing the skills gap and get people prepared for the jobs that are out there. So we're going to talk about that and the entrepreneurial journey that you've been doing since 2020 in the middle of the pandemic. Before we start, you listened to a couple of the podcasts already. If you had to describe yourself in two or three words as an entrepreneur, what words would you use?
So the two words I picked problem solver, because I come from a background of advertising. And so my whole career has been, how do we get this product to market? How do we go against the competition? What are those little niche areas where we can have the wins? And so I would say that, and then optimist. It's always for me that there's always a way. No is not an option, probably to a fault. So when you start your podcast, I love this because you're like 90% of all businesses fail. And it's like, oh, it's a very jarring start to your podcast. And then the optimist in me is like, wow, I feel bad for those other 90%. So it's to a point where, you know, failing is not a bad thing because you learn things. Nope. But for me, that advertising background of solving for people and having wins for our clients, those are the two that really are my foundation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool to hear that. Problem solver, optimist. Yeah. Really good qualities to have. Essential qualities to have, I would say. So interesting that you come from the advertising background and then you end up fixing the skills gap, or like, as you say on your website, connect youth to life-changing careers through games and so on.
Yeah, game-changing play. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So what you told me before we started, this is sort of a spin-off. And of course, that is always an interesting thing when there's something already happening in a company and suddenly something else starts to boil up. What was the problem that you saw in the market? And what is the revolution you tried to create here?
Yeah, so just as a direct answer to that question, I believe that we are solving awareness and access for youth into those life-changing careers that you just mentioned. So our background with advertising, 25 years, we focused on workforce development, economic development. So helping states in the US recruit industry, even internationally recruiting industry. So there were a lot of focus on manufacturing, automotive, aerospace, advanced manufacturing, and now even cyber. So we did a lot of that for states. And every year it was the top topic that kept coming up of all, what are we going to do to be able to support existing industry and recruiting new industry? So workforce development had been key all those years. On the other side, so that was the B2B side of our business. It was really, my roots were in that. I grew up in an aerospace family in New England. All of my family was in that company. And I even worked one summer in an aerospace at Pratt & Whitney. So I had an understanding what it could do for families and communities. So there's a real passion behind that. On the other side of our advertising experience, we did a lot of work with youth brands. So B2C, the consumer side, was working with youth brands and nonprofits. And so we went through the millennials, and that was a fun journey. And then we met Gen Z, and it was really working with that generation of how they learn. You know, they were the one first generation fully born with a phone in their hands and how they use technology. And so with seeing that challenge year after year on the B2B side of how are we going to get people for jobs? Where are they? What tactics and tools are we using that really was the kind of the moment of these aren't working, to looking at this generation of, well, they're on their phone. How often are we using the phone to reach those students and engage with them? And then the real final last straw, Tan, was my son. He was, Hector, was adopted. So English was his second language. He came as a teenager, loved cars. And as he was going through school, you know, there's some stigmas in the world about educational pathways or even some programs, probably less when you get into Germany and you have a lot of the programs for the automotive with apprenticeships and internships. But here in the US, if you're going to be in high school and you go through a vocational training or a CTE career and training pathway, or you look at a vocational college, there is a stigma of, oh, well, you're not going to 4-year. And so with all of those pieces coming together and navigating it with my son and the tools and the tactics that were existing out there, websites that you had to navigate to figure out how to get into an automotive career, and then watching videos that were just a one time and done, nothing engaging, between those experiences, that's when it was like, this has to be done differently. There has to be a better way, which goes back to the problem solving.
Exactly. So what is the opportunity if we get this right? If Gen Z starts to embrace the new way, what will happen?
So in schools right now, because of COVID and being behind in the catch up, there is little time to introduce the students to careers, especially the in-demand careers that I mentioned. You know, kids really go after what they see. They see a doctor, nurse, someone in business. Of course, now it's social media influencers. We're looking, you know, how can we be able to reach kids doing what they love? So kids, Gen Z, which is middle school, kind of if you think 13 up to age 24 is the age that we're talking about. They're spending 7+ hours a day on their phones, and that's outside of schoolwork, you know? And on top of that, 95% of that generation, no matter where they live in poverty, they have a mobile phone and access in most areas. And then 98% of this generation are playing mobile games. And so for us, if we could take what they're doing and where they are, and get them into these environments of these careers. Let them try these careers on through play. Get into, if it's an aerospace game, they can be an R&D part of the game and trying it out. And then they can go into the manufacturing side of it. So they're working with robots and what happens when robots go down and how do you fix them? And then you can even go into logistics and distribution. And in each area, you're learning about, you know, 30 to 40 jobs, not just one job, you know, many jobs and the salaries and the companies around you that are hiring. So our goal is to expose not only the youth to careers, but to the many jobs within those careers. You could be in cybersecurity, in automotive, you know, and so there's lots of crossover there. So that's our mission there, is to really connect the kids to engaging play.
Nice. Like it. Because I mean, it's really like, it's almost like the marketing game in itself, you know, like reach people. Yeah. Reach people where they are and don't do the opposite around. They are on their phones. They like the game.
You know, it's not new technology that we're bringing, you know, mobile phones are out there. Gaming is out there. But this is new to workforce development. And so that geolocation specificity, I can't say that word. When you're thinking about the youth playing that game and all of a sudden that geolocation connection. So they now, when they're playing our games, they get served, Tom, that right down the street from you is a company that's actually hiring for that job that you just did. And here's the name of that company. Nice. And then if they keep playing, they can actually learn about, hey, based on your age, this technical college down the street has a certificate and it's close to you. So if you like this, they have a program that you can get into. And then on the flip side, because of the mobility and the access to the youth when they sign up, you can recruit those students from the gameplay. So say we have a life science game and there's a life science pharmaceutical company that wants to recruit interested workforce. Well, now they can come to us and say, will you pull the top 1,000 players from this geographic location and let them know that this is a job that we're hiring for? So now we can connect those two better and cut down on turnover for industry.
Let's make a small interruption here. Tina just made an excellent remark about what's giving her company defensible differentiation. Instead of creating yet another recruitment platform, they looked at the problem from the other end. The problem is not that recruitment is inefficient. The problem is that there's not enough to recruit. It's an access and awareness problem. By inspiring high potential candidates about what their career could be, they have the potential to solve a massive global problem and end up with only winners. Students, companies, education, associations, and government. And this is a trait remarkable software companies master. They master curiosity and focus on the essence, solve the problem by creating new value possibilities, and with that, create momentum. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy and inspiration will spark in the next 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
And it's a big problem at the end, because I mean, I actually had two discussions today where the problem of not being able to find the right people was the issue. I've asked about 50 CEOs recently on LinkedIn about like what is the most persistent problem that just doesn't want to go away. And I think half of it was talent. And so it's everywhere. And I think it has become bigger, particularly in the geolocation space, because now normally people were pretty okay to go and find a job within a range of 20 kilometers, 20 miles where they live. But now that's like after COVID and the working from home and the hybrid situations, people just, the world is their location to search for jobs. And there's a consequence, things will move out of your space.
Yes. And that's a big problem. You think about underserved, you know, youth or those that kind of come out of high school, K-12, and maybe not sure what they want to do. And so there's opportunities for them to explore careers they haven't heard of before and maybe find a passion.
Yeah, exactly. Really good. Okay. So you started, I think, August 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the middle of COVID. Like, how did it start? I mean, I think, of course, it was a spin-off of another company.
We started talking about it. And so coming out of a company that you've run for 25 years, where you have some of my relationships that we had with clients were 25-year relationships. And so now we had to have conversations of, we're going away and we're doing mobile gaming. And you get all of these strange looks. But honestly, over the years, just knowing the challenges of workforce, all of our clients were living that pain. And so to hear us come to them and say, here's what our company's going to do. We're just starting to leak it out over the next, you know, we're going to take the last half of 2020 just to kind of introduce what we're going to be doing to our clients and to the regions that we had been doing business with for 25 years to let them know we're transitioning into something new, but it's really coming out of the work we've done with you. And we're going to take care of all of you, but this is important for us to do this journey to really have an impact on youth before we're all done with our careers. And what happened, Tom, with that soft, you know, kind of release, then we had California reach out and said, hey, we want to do this. Well, we weren't ready yet because we just had the soft launch of like, let's just start some buzz. But they were a wonderful, they really came alongside us while we finished out our product and were ones, this is San Bernardino County, California, the largest county, largest underserved county in the United States. And so they were patient and let us build out the product and became our first kind of beta as we launched the company. And we call them our original gamesters because they got it and saw the need. You know, California in the United States was really the most locked down for the longest. So the youth there were really at home and they wanted a way to reach the youth in an engaging way to keep them connected, but then also still moving towards the goal of, you know, education gets you to a career. So that was really exciting. And then 21. So our product, we have a framework that we built for our games. It's the same framework for the different industries, and we focus on 9 industries. So aerospace manufacturing, automotive manufacturing, the life and health sciences, which overlaps with STEM, cybersecurity, skilled trades, agriculture, advanced manufacturing, and soft skills, which everyone says if we just did that game, that would be the win. And so we built that framework out and then have been testing it and just some discussions with you, you know, talking to others to hear like, what are the terms you're using? Where, you know, how can we do this together? And so since then, that product being finished in 21, then we started going out to partners to sell it. We had, you know, this beta that we had tested to be able to share, here's what's happening. And so that's where we are right now. It is now we're in the mode of, hey, we have something that can really improve the lives of youth, make your jobs easier, and find a workforce for you that's interested in what you're doing. So let's peel back the layers of the thousands and let's look at the ones that really like what you're doing and put you two together.
Yeah, it's perfect matching. Yeah. That's where the magic happens. I mean, I recently wrote a long blog around a whole game of segmentation in B2B software companies. But this is almost like a different example of the same thing, but then for matching companies with the right people. Because when the click is there in terms of what you believe in, what you like, what you care about, what you want and need and so on, that's where this can happen. And it's just bringing people together.
This message is brought to you by Abercrombie & Fitch. I've been ready for summer for a while, and now it's finally time for summer outfits. With a trip coming up, the A&F Vacation Shop has me covered. Abercrombie really knows how to do a lightweight outfit. Their tees, sweater polos, and linen blend shorts never miss. I wear Abercrombie denim year-round. Their shorts are no different and have the comfort I need for summer. Prep for your next trip with the A&F Vacation Shop. Get their newest arrivals in-store, online, and in the app.
So interesting to hear about the framework, because one of the things is always, of course, there's so much technology out there. Like, where do you start? What are these important decisions that you make in order to not having to reinvent the wheel, but like really focus on creating defensible differentiation? Is that the framework that you're talking about?
Yeah, I love that you said not reinvent the wheel, because that was what we came out, our team, when we were thinking about how do we develop this. If we're going to have these 9 games, they don't each need to be different. It needs to be the same framework of how the game plays, so that as students move in between the same, there's not a learning curve that we lose the adoption and the drop off happens, so that the experiences can be the same. And so we came to the table with the 3 environments. Like, let's focus on R&D, innovation in all these different industries. And then the second area would be, you know, manufacturing, robotics, cyber. And then the last is, how is what you've done in those other 2 environments, how does it get out to the world and who does it get to in the world? And so those were 3 environments that, you know, as you play the game, those 3 environments, you know, change and get more challenging, but you're still in those worlds, if you will.
Yep.
But they crossed over to those 9 industries. And even in cyber, you know, you might be in, you know, the headquarters where you're learning about, you know, threats, but then there's lots of jobs, but then you have to learn about it from a company's perspective. So another environment in cyber is a company or technology and what happens in technology. So that was important for us. Like, we want to build a framework that easily, there's not a lot of education and marketing that has to go into educating between the games. It's really important.
Yeah, I understand, because you want to get that quick adoption. So that was the kind of starting from the framework that got you leverage in order to quickly have like a variety of environments available. What has been the hardest nut to crack in this journey? Because, I mean, you know, it's impressive what you've already achieved in just 2 years' time.
It was important for us that the games were free to play for students, so that we remove barriers for anybody. And so when you're a business that, you know, SaaS gaming, there's costs because you have data that's happening. And so there's expenses to put these games out. But it was really important for us to hold to our mission of, you know, connecting the youth to these careers, that had to be free, so all people could access all these experiences. So it has to get paid for somehow. And when we go into regions, a big part of what I shared with you, that access, is that connectivity to what's around you. We believe if we do not have that as part of the game, that we lose that being able to solve the problem better and faster and scale it. So when we started the company, it was important for us, industry number one, because they going to industry to sponsor the game in their area or their region or their country, to be able to cover those costs of reaching the students. There's some marketing involved, and industry organizations. So they get the pain and they also are spending the money. So, you know, if it costs about $5,000, I don't think of that transitioning into euros or whatever per employee.
Same.
Okay. So you have a new company coming to town and you need 100 employees. You're at $500,000 to get that crew onboarded. And a lot of them leave the very next day. So there's a lot of money being spent in training and even recruitment to educational pathways. You know, it might be $400, $500 to recruit a student, and universities are spending hundreds of thousands to $100 million across, you know, the world to recruit students. And so it's important to get, you know, they have the money, they're spending it. And if they could look to sponsor something, we thought we could have some wins there. So industry and then economic development groups, states and countries that have workforce initiatives in place where they have funds to help get the games out. And third are schools. Ultimately, we want the buy-in for schools to play. But what, to your question, Tan, was, you know, what challenges or, you know, did you run into? We knew there were silos, and that is the reason we went into this, is because we felt like a lot of the access was ending at silos, if you will. There'd be a gap in between really good programs that wasn't connecting the students to those careers, or the reverse way. And so that optimism in me was, it would be easy to get all the silos working together. Exactly. So the challenge is, there are really good programs and recruitments in place, but that whole connectivity of how they all work together is more challenging than expected. And so the change there for us has been, well, let's focus on those silos and then how our game works with the scaling and the reach. Instead of hundreds, you're reaching hundreds of thousands. So that can be where we go up and over the silos, but have everything working together. So that definitely was a moment of, oh, this is a little more challenging than I thought it would be.
I mean,
and it's new. And you know, you've been in this business with SaaS and all the different companies. When you bring something, not new technology, but a new way to look at workforce, like gaming, you know, when you talk to someone like, we're doing gaming and, you know, we're a workforce development pipeline company at our core. It's just that gaming is our tool, but still you'll get some people on the call that just like, interesting. Uh-huh. And then you have others that are, you know, 99% are excited and believe it's the way to go. And now it's just like, okay, now who are the stakeholders to deploy it out?
Yeah. Well, good question there is like, how do you decide where to prioritize and where not? Because if the world is generally excited about it, and you already, when you with your soft launch, you got reactions from different sides of the United States, like, we want to be doing this, we get this. How do you make sure that you focus on those projects that are going to make the biggest impact for the company, but actually at the end also for your customers?
Yes, I am really focused leading the sales initiative for our company. The focus is really on those industry and industry organizations, because it ends up being able to reach a broader audience quicker. So we can say, if you're a national or a global organization, you have the reach that can go back down to the individual industry organizations at state and region levels. And so for us, that's a shift of, let's focus on industry organizations that can pull together a couple larger organizations. So if you think about aerospace, you could get several larger global aerospace companies that can say, this affects our company everywhere, but we also know our suppliers are struggling. And if our suppliers can't get the workforce, then ultimately we're not going to get the workforce. And so they can carry the weight of some of the sponsorship for their suppliers, which might be like, you know, a 5-person company, but they still might need one worker, and that worker impacts the delivery time to the larger suppliers. So it's really kind of taking the ownership on the larger companies and industries that can pull up everybody together to really help that reach and to fill those jobs.
Nice. That's smart, because you take the overarching picture, and they know exactly like what are the bigger trends that are happening. And the challenges that keep their customers up at night, wherever that's in the supply chain. Smart. How will this over time influence how education works?
Well, you know, it's been really fun. I guess I can't say the couple states we've had conversations with that are really focused on being a top workforce state with the Department of Education for the state. So let me speak from the US side, and I'd love to hear any just kind of thoughts from where you are. But the federal Department of Ed nationally has really put a stake in the ground that industry, education, and government a commerce have to work together. And so there's a real push now to what I was sharing earlier, where it's still a little siloed, but now it's wonderful to be hearing that message coming down that this has to change for the way the world is changing. And when we have a game that is deploying in South Carolina, that's where our headquarters are, that's in the southeast of the United States. And they are 100% acceptive and supportive and have pushed. We have a life science game here that's called Rad Lab that's deployed. And they have made all of the teachers, career counselors, all aware of that game, that it's free to play for the students, that it checks all assessments for learning, and that it's something that the students can do in those 7 hours that they're on their phone to really get them plugged in. So it's been really exciting. And other states too that we're talking to now have been, you know, gamification is the way of the future. We're all seeing it in business when it comes to like when Zoom with COVID and a lot of our workouts and just that competitive nature we're seeing now play out in different ways that gamification is coming in. And we're going to see it more in the workforce as Gen Z enters, you know, and they're 24, so they're entering the workforce. So education, you know, there's been some games in education, but really looking for how curriculum even, now ours are more awareness and access, so not heavy curriculum. But we actually had a project that came across through our California client that they had asked if we could make a tobacco use and prevention curriculum and gamify it for them. This is at a Stanford University, their tobacco use and prevention education program. And so we're like, well, that helps youth and it's meaningful and it changes lives. And it's a project that we've got room to create. And it was really fun to watch how it's being used. And so the kids learn about, you know, how to fight against being marketed to, how to take a stand for their community and what health means, and it protects their family and their pets. And the game, actually, we launched it last year and it won Global Games for Change Best Health Game and Facebook Gaming's People's Choice Award. Wow. So it just shows that gamification is where this generation is. And it's how they recall. Like when you are doing something where your hands-on experiences, the recall is there. And so now if you listen to a teacher for 45 minutes or you're actually spending your time, the recall is better. And so we're going to see that growth incredibly explode over the next couple of years. So we're excited to be on that career side of the gameplay.
Amazing. Wow. So much potential there.
I was going to tell you some job stats because I think this is interesting. And I know you deal a lot with numbers with your clients. So in cyber, currently, there's 700,000 unfilled jobs.
Wow.
A variety of jobs around the world that, you know, you're starting at 50,000, they pay upwards of 100, and you can get, you know, with a little more education, you could be up a lot higher than that. And in manufacturing, by 2025, there will be 3.4 million manufacturing jobs in the world, and 2 million of those are going unfilled. That's 2025. So we're very close to that. So
it's almost 50%.
Yes. So, but in Gen Z, there are 2 billion globally. So if you start to run the numbers, it's not a people problem. They're there. It is an awareness it's and access problem, and getting the word out in a way that is more engaging, not just watch a video. Yes, that is supportive, but it has to be where there's real time engagement and wins. You know, like you did that and you actually achieved something, or you failed and you had a second chance at it because failing's okay. And so really getting the youth bought into that is going to be important for the future. And it's going to be the competitive advantage globally. Whoever has the workforce ready, that's where the companies are going to go. That's where innovation is going to happen. That's where production time can be up because you have the people on the lines. And so workforce is that competitive advantage globally.
Completely agree. There's so much noise around the automation, but the automation is needed as well in order to free up, well, because the workforce is declining rapidly. If you look, for example, at regions like Japan, and it's coming the other way around as well.
10,000 a day are retiring out.
Retiring, and there's nothing coming in.
Yes.
So we have to kind of be very, very smart on this. First of all, to get the work done in as we speak, but it's of course also that the nature of the work is changing so rapidly.
Yeah, Brazil, India, Japan, you're right. All of those countries that are, you know, the workforce going out and the challenge is heavy manufacturing and tech countries that need that workforce.
Fascinating. So talking about learnings, getting this to market, what have you learned from selling this? I mean, and who is your customer at the end? Do you sell this to, is this like to the industry and that's where the distribution happens? Or is it, you still have one-to-one relations with enterprises or with companies that say, okay, you know, I want to be a part of the platform?
Yeah. So once the company buys into it, and then we work with that region to customize the pathways, if you will, like what companies are there? What are the types of salaries? Where are the educational opportunities in that region? Then we have a deployment team that makes it very easy to connect with the school, the Department of Ed's in those regions just to get the support. And we provide them with a toolkit to hand out some webinars to train of like, hey, this is really easy. And then we have competitions in the games to keep the kids playing. You know, we're competing against the Pokemon Go's and we're competing for their time. And so it's really important that the schools are aware of it. They understand that it actually supports what they're doing. And so they will promote it and use it. And we have everywhere we are, they're using it in the schools, which is a win. And then we report that data back to our partners that sponsored into the regions, states, countries that, hey, here's what's happening. You have this many players. Here's, you know, what's happening with this industry. So we really support, and this is where our marketing background and having that workforce and youth has really been a terrific foundation for launching this company, because we know how to market to youth. We know what work industry and states, regions, countries need. And so we're able to put that messaging together and provide easy deployments. And so really for the partners that we go out to, which is industry, which I shared, and then we help deploy it in that region. It's a seamless process where their support to say we're supporting that next generation is kind of like that stamp of credibility that they come behind this
tactic. Works. Yeah, tool. It works. It becomes a flywheel.
Yeah. And then our team is responsible to meet that contract of we're going to get it deployed and we're going to have students playing. And we have these competitions where the kids win things like Xbox and some fun things to really get them playing and keep them engaged. So it's really fun to watch the kids in focus groups and all that. So we handle all of that. And it's really fun to hear feedback with the kids of, you know, just three top of mind comments from kids. One was from the cyber game where a student was, you know, I was thinking about cyber. I wasn't sure how to get connected. After playing this game, I'm actually looking out to Cal State, San Bernardino, you know, that has a cyber program to see where I could fit in. So that's a win. We had a life science student that was like, I got into a lab and I had no idea the types of jobs that happened in a lab. And it really interests me. So it was a real world experience for me. And then a third one was a student in a STEM summer camp that said, I would play this over watching hours of TikTok videos. So for us, that was a really, really big win to have just to see the excitement from the youth. And there was a study that was done. It was by during COVID to Gen Z of how do you think education could be improved for your growth? And Gen Z overall, it was, we would like to see where industry is involved in our education, telling us about the careers and the trends and hearing from them and also seeing people that look like us out there coming in. And so that is, it's exciting to hear that, you know, the youth are saying, this is what we want. And it's starting to connect between education, you know, commerce, and it's slowly coming together. And we think we can help bridge that faster, we believe we can bridge that faster and really help that connectivity happen.
Nice. Yeah, I'm fascinated with the bold idea and how big this can really get, and like the steps that you're taking. There's a lot to learn from that. I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, since you're now building your own remarkable or your own remarkable software business. What do you believe are traits that are essential to create a company that people cannot ignore? Let's put it this way this time.
People first. Okay. Putting people first, whether it's your own people. So, you know, internally for us, culture. In fact, we invested in a chief experience officer at an early stage because we knew we had to lead with a right culture, because people, it's a competitive environment. People will leave even if you have a great product, and taking care of your partners and your clients and really, you know, hearing from them, which I love. You talk a lot about that, like listening to others. And so people first, mission driven for us. And, you know, you talk of yours is tech entrepreneur on a mission. So for us, it is connecting youth to life-changing careers through game-changing play. And everything we do, does it align with that? Is it matching that? And then the third one I would say is just, you know, product focused. What's happening with it? What is the best viable product that can get out there? And then what do you build on from there? Like, you can go ahead and release. You don't have to have this, but where are some things that we want to add to our product? Because we know it's going to help connect the youth and make the youth better. And so we have, you know, regular meetings that we might not do that quite yet, but here's something we know that we're talking about that we want in product development when the time is right. So we're excited about that. So those are three things I would say from our company's perspective and learning, even from the past company we have, how important it is for people first.
Yeah. Completely agree. That's where the vibe starts to happen, and connected to the mission, that is almost magical there. And then the product will follow from there, because it's the combination of that. Looking at the hour, the top of the hour, from your long entrepreneurial journey and now starting a new venture almost, what would be a do and a don't that you would give to other aspiring tech entrepreneurs or tech entrepreneurs that really want to step up again?
You know, for the do, I would say surround yourself with excellent advisors and people that you can go to talk through a challenge, or if you're stuck, to really get some insight to guide you. Maybe they've been through it before and they can save you lots of headaches and money from their experience. And to me, you know, even making sure that we invest in the right accountant and the right attorney for privacy laws, so that you don't have to have a misstep that's going to cost you later. So do invest and surround yourself with those that are experienced, that can kind of bring you up. And then the don't, I would say, would be don't drag your feet on a decision. If you've sought the advice, make that decision and make it fast and move forward, and it'll be okay.
In other words, it's the decision that you make based on the information that you had at that point in time.
Yes. And sometimes going with your gut, Tan. I mean, sometimes you can have advice in that gut inside of you. You got to follow that sometimes. And if you make the wrong one, just keep moving forward. Don't sit in it. You know, just, we all make wrong ones, but you got to move forward.
Yeah. It's about the learning experience there. And I completely agree with surround yourself with experts or with peers. I get the same experience from the CEO mastermind that I'm running myself with CEOs from around the world. That's all what they say. You know, you cannot get certain things, you cannot discuss with subordinates, with your investors, with your board, because they're stakeholders. There's a different thing there. And therefore, you don't get the right answers. Yeah. There's the bubble. So get outside of that bubble. I completely agree. Well, thank you very much for this, Tina.
Fascinating journey. Thank you for the work you're doing. Like, listening to your podcast, I would add to that. Like, when you're thinking about advisors, like just listening to the different speakers you have and people sharing their challenges and what they learned, and then you hone in on something that is valuable for us as entrepreneurs. Just one little thought that's like, it can be a real game changer for that. Something you're thinking about. So it's really important too, just to listen to resources that are out there.
Exactly. There's a couple.
Yes.
You can go, in the meantime, you can go 6 times around the world.
Yes.
And listen to the whole series. Yes. But thanks for that. Thanks for that call out. And that's exactly why I'm doing this, because that gives me energy as well. I'm going to follow you on your journey. I really hope that this will be one of those solutions out there that is going to solve that skills gap that's out there and it's needed. Thanks for your time today and for sharing the wisdom.
It's been a good conversation. Thank you.
And this ends my conversation with Tina. I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Tina Zurlinski, CEO of SkillsGap.
As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.